Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We would like to acknowledge the Turrbal and Yuggera people as the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, and we would like to pay respect to the elders past, present and emerging.
Hello everyone and welcome back to General Queries. I am your host Talia. I am joined in the studio today with the dulcet tones of my wonderful co-host Nita.
Hello.
Yay, we're back. We are back for round two of Stonewall.
Konasatata tuosha. That means how are you?
In what language?
Irish.
Oh, nice. As you can tell, Nita's Irish. I'm doing good.
Hola.
I'm doing good, actually. I'm doing really well. I'm kind of glad to be back. I think I'm finally starting to get into the swing of all of these episodes and kind of like what the form is taking. So
Jazz swing.
Yes. I've been listening to a lot of jazz covers lately. They're really good.
They're very
jazz
good.
Jazz covers and ska covers.
I'm not gonna lie. I just listen to jazz covers of video game soundtracks.
You're so valid. Also, not to plug The National, but The National's new album, I Am Easy to Find, like that's been all I've listened to for the past 2 days. So
nice.
Yeah, it's good. So shall we jump into some Stonewall history?
I am down for that.
Okay, good. So last week we talked about
Let's do a flip. We're jumping in.
Oh, right. Yeah. Let's do a flip. So last week we talked about kind of the wider socio-cultural context for like America. We talked about the queer context for America. We talked about the language. So today we're going to actually look at the Stonewall Inn in Manhattan. So yes.
Talia, what is the Stonewall Inn?
I'm so glad you asked, Nita. So the Stonewall Inn is an inn. It's a bar situated in Greenwich Village, Manhattan, at 51 and 53 Christopher Street. It was named Stonewall because of its thick stone walls.
But an interesting name,
yeah. And because the inn itself actually used to be horse stables back in the day.
Nice,
yeah. It was. The Greenwich Village is like a more liberal region of America, of Manhattan. And I don't mean that in like the Australian...
American version of liberal.
Yeah, the American version of liberal. So this was the left-leaning-ish side. And the mafia ran the town. And there was quite a high rate of homelessness there. So it was popular with queer people. It was also popular with sex workers. Male and female sex workers and drag queens.
Sounds like a hell of a place.
It was definitely a place. Stonewall was considered the place that the not mainstream members of the community would go to. And by not mainstream, I mean they were homeless, they were lower socioeconomic, they were usually people of color, and they were usually trans and gender non-conforming people.
All right then.
Yeah. Anyone who wasn't a white, cisgendered, gay man, and the majority of the people who visited the bar were kind of living in poverty. I came across a couple of sources that were talking about, you know, how it started off being marketed towards white cis gay men, and then it slowly, because like they stopped, it took a lot for those people to get to the inn, it slowly just became the place for non-mainstream members.
There was some cultural drift.
So it went the way it went. At this point in time, we're still talking late 60s, we're still talking Still talking 1969. At this time, it was not unusual for the mafia to be in partnership with gay establishments. So the mafia did indeed own Stonewall.
Mm-hmm.
And there was... So the Luciano family was the mafia family that owned Stonewall.
Alrighty then.
There you go. The way it would work is they would often either obtain illegal licenses for the bars to sell liquor for the bar because it was really hard for queer establishments to get a liquor license, or alternatively they would pay off the police to kind of just avert their eyes and look the other way regarding the liquor licenses. So this is exactly what happened with Stonewall. They skirted around the law by calling themselves a private club. And by calling themselves a private club, they were able to get away with selling alcohol because everyone who went there was considered members rather than patrons.
Yes.
So yeah, then they didn't have to buy like a wider liquor license. And everyone,
a pretty fair way to get around the law.
Yeah. And they were the member patrons were given the benefit of not paying for their drinks. However, you did have to pay admission into the club, into the inn, which was between $3 and $4. And I think last time we did the math, that rounded off to about like $30 Australian, $30 2019 Australian.
It's a fair bit.
It's quite a bit of money is the thing. And you know, in return for paying your $30 Australian, you would get a voucher for two drinks. They also,
two drinks is not something to sneeze at.
I mean, for $30, you'd want them to be...
I mean, $30, two drinks, and, you know, kind of like somewhat safe area, you know? It's
yeah.
kind of like, it's a little bit of a yeah. thing. Like,
I think, like, I was having a conversation with Megan about it, and it wasn't... Like, in my research, what's come up is the mafia wasn't so much pro-queer...
As they were pro-money.
Yeah, as they were pro-money. And that's kind of what happened here. Like, everyone else was like, we don't want to talk to queer people. And the mafia was like, in that case, that's a market that nobody's looking at. Let's tap into that one.
Can you really expect the mafia not to jack the prices up, though?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, it's kind of like bottlenecking everything so that, like, you know, it just got to be
it's
like
an untapped market.
Yeah. Just to make sure that they didn't let police in. To the club, to the inn. I keep calling it a club.
I mean, it's kind of a club.
It's kind of a club. But
it's just called an inn.
Yeah.
Which sounds, you know, quaint and fancy.
Yeah, quaint and fancy.
Medieval.
Yeah, that's true. There was like a guy playing like a lyre in the corner.
Little brought his harp across town to accurately portray his bard.
Yeah, that's it.
The D&D campaign.
The D&D campaign. So in the 60s, everyone really enjoyed D&D. No. So to make sure that they weren't accidentally letting a police officer in, there was a guest list and there were guards at the front of the inn who monitored everyone who came in. And to be let into the inn, you had to come with someone who could confirm that you weren't police.
You can't go it alone.
You really can't go it alone. And because they kept a list of all of the names, there are quite a number of people like didn't actually use their real names. So Elizabeth Taylor and Judy Garland were apparently the top two most frequent visitors to the Stonewall Inn in the 60s. Because
good on them.
Yeah, I mean they're both queer icons of the time, so I'm not surprised. But I also really like the fact that people were like, I'm not using my real name. My name is actually Elizabeth Taylor. And this security guard just looking at whoever and being like, yeah, all right.
That's legit.
That sounds, yeah, okay, cool.
It's a name.
Yeah, so if you were like proven to cause trouble or whatever, they'd kick you out. But for the most part, as long as the guards kind of knew who you were.
Then all was well.
All was well, yeah.
It was all Stonewall.
Wow, I can't. Thank you for your puns.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. I don't know why I said you're welcome. So other sources, Nita, thank you for asking, give like a slightly different account of history. So they record Stonewall as being like a private bottle bar, which functioned similar. Yeah, they functioned similar to a club. So to maintain like this image of exclusivity, but the patrons had to provide their own drinks. It really, again, it's kind of like, not quite sure which one to go with. I think it was the first one. Yeah, I think the whole thing with the vouchers was, yes. Oh, they did, yeah, the Genovese family, yeah. Yeah, so Stonewall was protected by the Genovese family at the time, and they bribed the 6th police precinct in New York to kind of ignore everything that happened. And they also had a couple of people in the police force who would let them know when raids were happening so they could tell everyone in the bar to leave. And then like everyone would leave and come back, or they'd be like, oh, there's going to be a raid on tonight. Maybe like avoid the place tonight, avoid it tonight.
Stay home, have a cuppa.
Yeah. So that's Stonewall the Inn.
That is Stonewall the Inn.
Okay. Now let's talk about like if you ever research, if you are planning to do some research into Stonewall, here are some big names that are gonna come up. There's three big names that I think we need to talk about.
Who are these big names, Talia?
The first one is Marsha P. Johnson. The P stands for Pay It No Mind. Okay.
All right, then.
She was born in 1945 in New Jersey. She was a outspoken activist. She was an African American trans rights and gay rights activist, as well as an AIDS activist. And she worked as a sex worker and a drag queen. Nowadays, she is referred to as a drag woman. No, not a drag woman, a trans woman, sorry. There is a documentary on Netflix called The Life and Death of Marsha P. Johnson, which I have been told is very good. I have not seen it.
I have not seen it either.
I have not had the time to see it, but apparently it is very good. And also, not to kind of plug content that is in ours, I'm definitely going to do that. There is a really good podcast called Making Gay History, who actually, so the point of it is the guy who runs it goes around and talks to people who are kind of like big prevalent figures. And he talks to Marsha P. Johnson during one of his episodes. And it's just the way she talks about things, because she's gone through so much. The way she kind of talks about things, and she's like constantly upbeat, and she's constantly like, yeah, like this is how it is. This is how it be. Like things are terrible, but also we can get through it. Like she strikes me as just a very wonderful soul to be around. So yes, that's kind of the big name.
Yes. Marsha P. Johnson.
Marsha P. Johnson. And then the next one is Sylvia Riviera. So she is also a trans. She was also a trans and gay rights activist. She was also a drag queen.
All right then.
So also trans. Her parents were of Venezuelan and Puerto Rican descent, and she was born in New York in 1951. So by today's standards, she'd also be referred to as a trans woman.
Yes. All right then.
And the last one is Stormy DeLavier, who most people would call the Stonewall lesbian, and we'll get into kind of the Stonewall lesbian a little bit later.
Okay.
She was a biracial butch lesbian and a drag king. She toured with the Jewelbox Revue as a drag cabaret performer. And after Stonewall, she went on to she stopped doing drag after Stonewall, and she became a security guard at local lesbian bars. So a lot of the sources kind of refer to her as like this mother of the lesbians almost, which is a really nice image.
It is an interesting one, yeah. I will admit.
And she also has a documentary about her called Stormy, the Lady of the Jewelry Box.
All righty then.
Okay. And the last one that I want to mention, he's not really like a big name per se, but I really like his art.
We're going to just mention this.
We're just going to mention it.
Shout out to the artist.
Thomas Lanigan,
I believe.
Thomas Lanigan Schmidt. called Mother Stonewall and the Golden Rats. And I would like to read you a little bit.
Ooh.
I think, like, I do think people should read it. It's just a little short story. It's like a page long.
Do read me an excerpt.
So easy to find. The jukebox played a lot of Motown music. We danced. The air conditioners seemed not to work at all because the place was so crowded. We were happy. This place was the art that gave form to the feelings of our heartbeats. Here, the consciousness of knowing you belonged nestled into that warm feeling of finally being home. And home engenders love and loyalty quite naturally. So we loved Stonewall.
That's very nice. I'm like that a lot.
It's
good on him.
It's a beautiful piece. He was part of the riots. And a lot of his art, like he does a lot of work with drag and stuff like that.
Okay.
I like his art. He's not very well known though, and I think it's because his art is queer and political that he's not very well known. But you know, if someone wants to go out and look at artists, instead of looking at, you know, Damien Hirst, look at Thomas Lanigan Schmidt.
Or wait until he dies and becomes famous like every other artist.
Yeah, that's also that. How are we going for time? We will need to cut stuff from this. Oh, good. Okay, excellent. I was worried for a second.
We might need to cut some of the longer pauses.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, good.
Awesome.
Cool. So, what actually happened on the night of...
Yes, Talia, what did actually happen? I don't know why you're looking at me like I know the answer here.
I'm going to tell you, Nita. Nita's looking at me like, Talia, I don't know what you want from me. I don't.
I mean, I do, but I also like to just...
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so Stonewall happened, like the first night of the Stonewall riots happened on...
What is the first night of the Stonewall riots, Talia?
It was Saturday, June 28th, 1969. What constitutes the Stonewall riots went on for 5 days after this point. This is... it's Marsha P. Johnson's birthday.
All right, then.
It's a Saturday.
That's just... It's a good night to go out.
It's a good night to go out. Yeah. So what I have tried to do, because there are multiple versions of this story, what I have tried to do is compile all of them. I'll give you all of the versions of what I think happened, but there's one narrative that kind of comes through really strongly. So
no matter what happened, there's always going to be those narrative threads. And usually if you can pick up on those narrative threads, that's usually what happened.
Yeah. So I will try and address all of like the loose ends and stuff like that as they kind of come up. But we will see how this kind of works. This is
primary sources, people.
Yeah, primary sources. A lot of this is because, again, like I said in the last episode, queer history isn't well documented. So a lot of our like collective understanding comes from oral histories, which can be conflicting and can be contradictory. And then you have like different primary sources saying different things, and then also like the myth of Marsha P. Johnson as well that we've kind of built up. So also, while I'm going to flag it here, there is a movie called, we will talk about it later, but there is a movie called Stonewall that came out in 2015.
Yes.
That's definitely not an accurate representation of what happened in no way, shape or form.
Gotcha.
Yeah, cool.
Just so we're clear on that one.
Yes, just so we're clear on that one. So
let's talk... Common narrative threads of Stonewall.
Okay, so at 1:30 a.m., a routine raid was led on Stonewall by Deputy Inspector Pine and Detective Smythe. Stonewall had not been pre-warned about this raid. They came armed with a warrant, and they raided Stonewall under the guise of... searching the establishment for selling liquor without a license.
All right, then.
Okay. It was most likely a targeted raid. Past 2 days, the police commissioner has actually released a statement saying that it was a bigoted act that exercised police control. So yeah, it was much more likely that it was a targeted thing and they were just dressing it up as, we're just raiding you because you're selling liquor without a license.
We all know the truth.
Yeah. By the end of the riots, by the end of the night, 13 people had been arrested. That's patrons and employees. Okay. So also at this time, I said that we would get to it in the last episode, and now we're getting to it. At this time, there was a state criminal stature that allowed for the arrest of anyone who wasn't wearing at least 3 articles of gender-appropriate clothing. So anyone who was a suspected cross-dresser was taken into the bathroom and they were searched or frisked. So either you were taken into the back and basically told to strip down, or you were frisked and the police kind of just put their hands all over you.
Checked out your junk.
Yeah. So
both suck.
Yeah. Both kind of suck. So here's where we get to the drunk histories thing. Drunk histories, I'm sure everyone knows about drunk histories, but it's basically a show where people get really drunk and then they tell versions of history that they're interested in or that they know of. And they tell really odd stories from all around the place. So the story that is told in Drunk Histories is that Marsha P. Johnson, like a police officer, walked up to her and said, "Hey, we're going to frisk you. We think that you're in breach of this particular clause of this particular act." And she grabbed a shot glass and she went, "I've got my civil rights." And she threw it at the mirror and went, "Let's start a riot." That's the version that Drunk Histories gives us. And it's the version that a lot of people accept. Marsha P. Johnson herself, from the research I have been able to find, has actually openly come out and said, "Look, I was part of the riots. I definitely threw a brick or two. I didn't throw the first brick."
Alrighty then.
Okay. So we have a lot of people who kind of have developed. I'm not quite sure how it came about. But we have somehow ended up with this myth of Marsha P. Johnson started the Stonewall Riots.
Talia, who did start the Stonewall Riots?
I'm going to cut that question because I really want you to read a quote. Would you like to read it?
Read a quote.
The Sylvia Riviera quote.
Alrighty then.
Okay, so this is...
one here?
Yes.
Alrighty.
So Sylvia Riviera talks about what would normally happen during a raid.
Okay. Here is a quote from Sylvia Riviera. "Back to the story. We were all in the bar having a good time. Light flashed on. We knew what was coming. It's a raid. This is the second time in 1 week that the bar was raided. Common practice says the police from the 6th precinct would come into each gay bar and collect their payoff. Routine was faggots over here, dykes over here, and freaks over there, referring to my side of the community. If you did not have 3 pieces of male attire on you, you were going to jail, just like a butch dyke would have to have 3 pieces of female clothing or he was going to jail. The night goes on, you know, they proof you for ID, you know, back then you could get away with anything. Fake IDs were great back then because I wasn't even 18 yet. I was going to turn 18. We are led out of the bar. The routine was that the cops get their payoff, they confiscate the liquor. If you were a bartender, you would snatch the money as soon as the light went on because you would never see that money again. A padlock would go on the door. What we did back then was disappear to a coffee shop or any place in the neighborhood for 15 minutes. You come back, the mafia was there cutting the padlock off, bringing in more liquor, and back to business as usual."
Thank you. So unfortunately, this wasn't business as usual. So the... Stormy DeLavier. So a police officer walked up to Stormy DeLavier and said, "You're a butch lesbian. I'm going to frisk you." And they dragged a whole bunch of these patrons and employees outside. And instead of running away, there was actually quite a crowd outside of the Stonewall Riots. And Stormy DeLavier resisted arrest.
All right, either.
And she was clubbed over the head outside of the bar. So Stormy DeLavier herself says, she confirms that she is what everyone refers to as the Stonewall lesbian.
"The officer then yelled, 'I said move along, faggot. I think he thought I was a boy. When I refused, he raised his nightstick and clubbed me in the face.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, like she's 100% the Stonewall lesbian. Like she has confirmed that. Yeah, there you go. From there, because this wasn't business as usual, outside of Christopher Street, there was a crowd that had gathered and they were watching Delavier be beaten. So it was like her beating was so bad, she ended up with 14 stitches along her chin.
Ouch.
And as she was being beaten, she screamed, "Why don't you guys do something?" And then all of a sudden people started attacking the police with literally whatever they could find. Like there is records of them throwing lighters, them throwing it didn't start off with bricks, but it ended up with bricks.
It graduated.
It graduated to bricks, if that is
I think that can be considered a graduation. It is an evolution.
It is an evolution to
bricks. They reached a specific level of experience.
Yeah. I think it's just also a really interesting thing to know that like for a long time after the Stonewall riots, nobody really knew who the Stonewall lesbian was. Everyone was just like, yeah, there was a butch lesbian. Like she, and then when Stormy DeLavier, when she gave an interview and she said, oh yeah, no, also that was me. Everyone kind of came to her and went, okay, why didn't you say anything? And her response was, it was nobody's business.
That's a power move.
Yeah, like I really kind of like that attitude of just like, I mean, yeah, like.
Started a riot, no big deal.
I started a riot, like, all right, yeah, but it's also like, it's not, who cares? Like anyone can start a riot, go off.
How is the best way to start a riot or a fight? What is the best thing you say? You guys want to start a fight?
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, there we go. That is considered
the first punch.
Yeah. I think like when you talk about Stonewall, there's a focus on firsts, you know, like the first shot glass or the first brick or the first Molotov or like any sort of things like that. But I think the best version that we've got is that Stormy DeLavier was forced out of a bar. She was beaten half to death, 14 stitches. And she was like, we need to riot. And then they did.
And that is the beginning.
That is the beginning. So we are 1:30 in the morning.
Yep.
And a riot has broken out. Okay. Next week we will talk about what happened.
We shall talk about the riot. So this is a cliffhanger.
This is a cliffhanger. We wrote this so incredibly well. What a wonderful cliffhanger.
Thank you, history, for giving us this cliffhanger.
Yeah. For everyone out there in podcast listening land, I'm so glad. I hope you're learning something.
I'm definitely learning, Talia.
Thank you, Nita.
Nothing else, you've educated me.
Thank you, Nita. I feel so blessed and wonderful and happy to know you. Everyone out there in podcast listening land, please remember to drink water, eat food, even if it's just a little bit, and take your meds.
And if a police is beating you over the head, punch them.
Yeah. just
maybe don't do that one. Like, you know, just be careful.
If someone is attacking you, I think the best advice that I can probably give is be specific to, like, if you see other people, be specific and scream out, like, I need you to do this thing for me, because people don't like getting involved with things. So you need to actually make them feel like they...
bystander syndrome. Yeah,
they need to be involved in the thing. Yes. Take care of yourselves. Please try and get enough sleep tonight. And we will see you all next week. Take care of yourselves. Bye.
The Disney vs. Disney Debates podcast is all about finding the answer to one simple question. What is the best Disney movie of all time? Maybe the question isn't that simple. So join us every Saturday as hosts from all across That's Not Canon fight for their movies in one-on-one debates moderated by me, Zane C. Weber, in order to decide once and for all which of Disney's beloved classics or recent hits will take the crown.
Mine.
Save it for the show. Available now on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever you find podcasts.
That's Not Gunna Productions podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.